When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We are live on FFC. It's Football Full Circle, all a part of the Sports Grid Radio Network and Sirius XM Channel 159. We'll welcome in that audience in just a moment. He's Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens. It's a Wednesday in the middle of a week at the midway point of this NFL season in 2023. Weeks 1 through 9, now finished and through. Weeks 10 through 18, the back half of this regular season, Scott, on the horizon. It starts in just one day, and boy, what a dandy we have in the standalone primetime games for week number 10. I say that very facetiously, as it will make you question why you love football, but we still do love football. Scott, a lot to get to here in the second half of this 2023 NFL season, and of course, college football into the second Saturday in November with more updates on the Michigan sign-stealing scandal following the second set of rankings unveiled last night by the College Football Playoff Selection Committee.
Yeah, the Michigan thing gets weirder and weirder. It really is just like it's a never-ending thing. And like I said yesterday, you know, you almost wonder if this is helping Michigan because they can't close the investigation when every other day we're getting new information. So that leaves it open for Michigan to not get any punishment they may get until maybe the end of the year or, more importantly, next year. They had a selection committee. No surprises, right? As I told you, most of the, you know, all the top 15 teams all won. I still would like to see them, you know, drop Michigan a little bit, but... seems kind of weird that they go out of their way to really benefit Michigan. It just goes to show how much they love that program. And you wonder, like, at the beginning of the year, could you make a case for Carolina, you know, and the Bears? I guess, Ben. But, you know, don't they realize these Thursday games? This is when everybody is watching, you know? I think more people theoretically could watch on a Thursday night than even a Sunday afternoon when you're doing things with the family, the weather is still good. You want to have your monster, you know, Sunday night and Monday night and Thursday night games, and yet it's Chicago and Carolina. We've had some real clunkers. Wow, that's tough to imagine, even at the beginning of the year, thinking that one's going to be anything more than a 3-win football team for Carolina and maybe a 3 or 4. Maybe the Bears with Justin Fields they thought was going to be good, but I don't know. That's a tough sell for me.
Yeah, absolutely so, right? And we expect it to be Tyson Bagent. Justin Fields has been listed as a limited participant each of the past 2 days in practice, but it's a short week to heal up and get healthy after Fields has missed the last 3 games for Chicago. Let's welcome in that Sirius XM audience, Channel 159, live right here on Sports Grid Radio. It's Football Full Circle. He's Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens. Scott, when you look at the primetime games, the standalone games even, this week, they are a couple of doozies. First, as we said, Thursday night football between the Bears and the Panthers. An interesting game, Scott, for the future of Chicago's franchise, because of course these two teams traded for the number one overall pick this past draft. Chicago had it based on the worst regular season record. The Panthers moved up from 9 to take that first overall selection and draft Bryce Young, but because of that, the Bears got back a bounty, including Carolina's 2024 first round NFL draft pick, which means that at this moment, as Carolina has the worst record in the NFL, that would be number one overall for Chicago. Arizona also only a one-win team, but that is something to keep in mind. It could be a battle, Scott, for Chicago, with the Bears having two of the top five picks in next April's 2024 NFL draft. Then we have a standalone game in Frankfurt for the second straight week. It's the Colts and the Patriots. It's a 1.5-point spread in favor of Indianapolis. And Scott, maybe most concerning is there's a new rule in the NFL that you can flex out primetime games starting, I believe, week number 5 for Sunday night football. And yet we have not seen that be the case. And this would seem to be the prime example. The New York Jets against the Las Vegas Raiders in Las Vegas on Sunday. And yet the league did not flex out this game. It will be the Raiders and the Jets on Sunday. New York, a 1.5-point road favorite.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot to just flexing out of a game. You know, if you're a fan, you're like, well, what are they doing? You know, flex out of this stupid game. Nobody cares about this. But think about who broadcasts these games. You know, you're not flexing out from a Fox game to a Fox game or a CBS game to a CBS game. You're right. Flexing out of an NBC game on Sunday night or different networks into, you're stealing my game? What do you mean? I'm looking for Philadelphia, Dallas. I'm all set. I'm Fox, we'll just say. You know, I'm all set to broadcast this. And then I find out, you know, a week or two beforehand that I'm not getting that game because I'm giving it to NBC for Sunday night? What are you kidding? So I'm sure there's a lot of like rough talk behind the scenes of flexing out of some of these games because yeah. It's not, like I said, just flexing out. You're stealing another network's monster game.
Right, absolutely. So you're not trying to, as another TV network, provide your marquee matchup to NBC to see their best viewership ratings. That being said, there are certain geographical and regional ties in regulations to broadcasting if a game is in that 1 p.m. window or the 4 p.m. window or whatever it might be. But on top of that, Scott, it's also a change logistically for these franchises when they travel, how they practice, when they get ready for a game. If they were expected to play at 1 p.m. and now it's an 8:20 p.m. Eastern time kick. It's not a huge change. It's not like you're playing on Saturday instead of Sunday or Thursday instead of Sunday, but still all of those things. It's an operation behind the scenes, to say the least. But it's not necessarily the marquee matchup, Scott, that we had in week number 9, a marquee standalone game in each and every window. Not necessarily the case here in week number 10.
Yeah, and not to mention, oh, by the way, the fans who are thinking, yeah. You know, they're going to a 1 o'clock game. It's going to be Sunday. Even if it is cold, at least it'll be somewhat warm versus, oh, by the way, now you're going to a Sunday night game at 8:30. And it's like, I got to get up at 7 o'clock the next morning. What are you kidding me? So there is a lot to it for sure. But, you know, that said, it's all part of the picture. And this NFL season hasn't been great, right? I mean, we haven't had, like, mm-hmm. great games that we've come on the air and talked about. And, you know, if anything, it's been the negative talk about the officials being lousy or the head coaching making crazy decisions like we saw this past weekend with a couple of more head coaches that lost games, in my view, because they didn't know what they were doing with clock management. So, you know, we are desperate for that monster game and real good game.
Yeah, absolutely so. And Scott, when you think about scoring this year as well, it has been down. Unders have been hitting in a very, very large way. It's been incredibly profitable if you bet the under. Is it something close to 61%, Scott, if you were just to blind bet the under on every NFL game we've seen in the opening half of this season?
It is. I'll tell you here in a second. I got the numbers. Yeah. I don't know the percentage, but overall, you know, listen, this is going to fluctuate depending on what numbers you use, but I have 83 unders, Ben, 53 overs, including 11 and 3 this past week. 83 and 53. So whatever percentage that works, that's amazing, including 22 and 7 in these primetime night games.
Crazy. 62.2%, Scott. That is the number of unders that have hit this year. Even the most positive EV bettors that work in the large syndicates out in Las Vegas would dream of going 55%, let alone 62%, and what those margins would mean. So, yes, there has been some ugly football at times, and maybe not at times, in a good majority this season. Hopefully, we start to see a couple of games pick up as we get into the second half and we have a true evaluation of who all all of these teams are, because that's where we are at this moment, Scott. Week number 10 starts the second half of an 18-week NFL regular season. We'll look at some of the early lines for this upcoming Sunday slate on the other side of the break here on Football Full Circle. Make sure you come back and join us. We'll get you set early on for the second half up next here on FFC.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We're live right here on Football Full Circle. So, Scott, maybe not the marquee matchups of week number 9 to end out the opening half of the 2023 NFL season, but as the second half begins in week number 10, still a couple of good games to break down and take that early line approach to. First, got some updates around the National Football League. Will Levis has been named the official starter for Tennessee the rest of the way. They blamed it on injuries to Ryan Tannehill, why Levis got his first two starts of this year following the bye week, but really, Scott, I think they were trending toward the future. Now that is officially confirmed. Will Levis is the starting quarterback in Tennessee for the rest of the year. The Titans got a slight 1.5-point underdog on the road in Tampa Bay against the Buccaneers, who just lost in a dismal way to a rookie quarterback a weekend ago.
Yeah, you wonder, you know, did they make Ryan Tannehill been available at the trade deadline and no one wanted him? Or did they just come to this, you know, proclamation over the last couple of days? Because I don't think he played particularly well against Pittsburgh. First game, yes. Second game, no. And then two, hey, you know, I always feel bad for the underdog. If you're Malik Willis, you're like, whoa, wait a minute. What happened to me, right? You know, he used a high draft choice on me just last year, 2 years ago, however you want to look at it. You know, why is he getting the benefit of the doubt and not me? So, but, you know, this obviously spells the end, you would think, of Ryan Tannehill's career with Tennessee. And, you know, in a lot of ways, you got a lot of quarterbacks out there, Ben, like veteran quarterbacks that may have just seen their last day in an everyday starting lineup. Backup, yes, yeah, if they want to hang around. But the list is getting longer and longer with some of these veteran quarterbacks.
Scott, we expect Tommy DeVito for the New York Giants, the rookie out of Illinois by way of Syracuse, to get the start on Sunday in Dallas, not because he has earned it or because he has had a successful offseason into the regular season, whatever it might be, just because of the Giants quarterback situation. Tyrod Taylor is still injured, and of course, Daniel Jones, suffering the torn ACL for the G-men in Las Vegas last weekend, is out for the remainder of this year. DeVito will be the 10th rookie quarterback to start a game this year, Scott. That is a single season record in the history of the National Football League. It's part of the reason, Scott, I think we are seeing some dismal offensive outputs and a little bit of bad football at times. Now, Levis is the face of the franchise, or at least that is the hope in Nashville, right? To see what this guy can be for the Titans organization. That has not always been the case for some of the rookies who have started this year. Jaren Hall for Minnesota last week. Clayton Tune last week for Arizona. Now Tommy DeVito thrust into this situation that the Giants were obviously not hoping to be in at all. Scott, speaking of the G-men, this is the largest spread that I can remember seeing this year, 16.5 in favor of Dallas in Dallas on Sunday. The boys look to bounce back. The Giants, Scott, are in a tailspin.
Oh, they are bad. You know, I sent this tweet out the other day. Been around a long time, watch a lot of football here in the New York area, Ben. You can make the case when the Giants start Tommy DeVito Sunday and the Jets start Zach Wilson that could be the worst pair of New York quarterbacks to start a weekend in, you know, since I've been around, you know, 49 years, I'll say. And we won't go to the 50. I mean, it is it's that bad, right? Even though Zach was a, you know, number 2 overall pick, but just when you look at them play on the field, I mean, it could be the worst. You got to go back to like the Jerry Goldstein days, and guys were texting me, you know, Browning Nagel and a few of the others. We've had some bad ones, but this bad for both teams. I mean, listen, it's tough to lay 16.5 points in an NFL game, right? But if you watched him play over the last 2 weeks, I mean, he has got no business being in an NFL uniform. He wasn't any good in college. He couldn't stick at Syracuse, and he wasn't very good in Illinois either. So it's just like, I don't know what he's doing in an NFL uniform. Shame on the Giants. And you can say maybe the same thing about the Jets. It's amazing how these two franchises mirror each other right now, but how come they didn't sign Carson Wentz? You know, are the Giants waving a white flag on the season completely? You know, Jets at least could say, well, we did win three in a row heading into the Charger game. So even though Wilson wasn't playing great, we were winning. So, you know, we didn't think we need to bring in Carson Wentz. But
yeah,
you could make that argument for both teams, right? If you really wanted to win, well you're not going to win with Tommy DeVito. I mean, there's just no way.
Certainly so. I mean, it's a really difficult situation for the New York Giants, who, Scott, actually prior to last week had covered in three straight games as an underdog. But still, for the New York Giants, that's about as bad as a situation as you will find. And the question, Scott, you mentioned a couple of veteran quarterbacks who might not be taking a snap again for their teams or as a starter. The question for the Giants for Daniel Jones moving forward are going to mount in an incredible way. The way the deal was structured by Joe Shane does allow the G-men to get out of it after 2 years with a lot of that money fully guaranteed up front. I don't know, Scott, if Daniel Jones comes back, right? He suffered his injury week number 9. What exactly that timetable is for return to be even in consideration for that Giants starting job. But if they're going to have a high draft pick and a quarterback-rich draft class, are they looking to their future already? Might Daniel Jones have taken his last snap as a New York Giants quarterback before he is released? Because that seems like the eventuality, Scott, at the end of 2024. They're on the hook for it, and it's going to cost them a pretty penny, but it might seem like Scott Danny Dimes' days in the Big Apple are coming to a close.
Yeah, it's tough. And probably at worst, Ben, the Giants would have to, you know, draft a quarterback, right? The way things are going, they're probably going to have a top 5, top 6, 7 pick, right? So you're in a position to draft a decent quarterback. There's just no way in the world the Giants could go into next year saying, okay, Danny Nichols, you're still our guy. I mean, the fan base would go nuts over that. Yes, he had a great year last year, terrific. That got him the contract, but this year was back to the old Danny Nichols, and I just can't imagine them saying, all right, we're going to hand you the keys to the franchise again. So he was one of those quarterbacks, yeah, that could have seen. Like I said, I don't know if they could just cut him or would anyone trade for him. I doubt that, maybe, but they can't, like I said, go into next season saying, all right, you're our guy. No matter, you know, come hook or crook, we're not drafting a quarterback. Can't believe they would do that.
Yeah. I could not either, Scott. How do you tell the fan base, hey, we're trying to move forward in a positive direction? Yeah. All right, so now from some of the clunkers on the Sunday slate, Scott, you mentioned Carson Wentz signing with the Rams. The Rams, thankfully, in a bye week. But I think signing Wentz in a bye week, Scott, is an interesting indication of how healthy Matthew Stafford is or is going to be the rest of this season. Actually, before we dive into some of the other games, Scott, what was your thought on the Rams trying to reignite whatever Carson Wentz still has left in the tank?
Yeah, you wonder why he didn't sign earlier. Was it about money? I'm guessing it was about money. But, you know, eventually, if you really want to play, you say, all right, well, listen, it's not out there. You know, so it's not there. So why don't I just sign now? And that really didn't happen. It didn't happen, you know, with the Vikings. You know, did the Vikings go after him or they passed on Carson Wentz? So curious, the Rams, and then the Rams are 3-6. I mean, there's a lot of football left. We got 8 games, but at 3-6, even in the NFC, boy, you know, they really have to go on a winning tear. So I would suspect that there's more clearly to the injury for Matthew Stafford.
Yeah.
And if you're a Rams fan, you know, you got to be encouraged. At least your team's not waving a white flag on the season. I didn't think that they would, but it just, this is what they saw out of Brett Rippon. Again, another there are so many quarterbacks. That are just like, you watch them play and you're like, what are you? It can't be that bad. What are these guys doing in an NFL uniform? There's got to be somebody. I mean, these guys were having difficulty completing passes. This might be, honestly, we've had bad quarterback play and this and that, but this might be, as a group, the worst quarterback play I can ever remember. Just horrible. You run down the list of quarterbacks, it's just like, my goodness. And they're making everything as easy as possible for the quarterbacks, right? I think, you know, we had a little conversation on our podcast. I think the only step that they realistically could do to increase the passing is eliminate the chuck rule. You know, it used to be you could chuck the wide receiver 15 yards down the field. Then they said, you know, then we got to make it over the first 5 yards. That would realistically be the only thing. Like, you know what? You can't hit the wide receiver at all now. You got to let these wide receivers get down the field because the quarterbacks only have 2 seconds to throw. It's not like the old days when they had 4. That would be the only thing. Otherwise, the quarterback is having a difficult time having success this year.
And Brett Rypien, not even one of those 10 rookies to start a game this year that has led to this disastrous quarterback play. Scott, even the guys that are the elite names that we know are not lighting the world on fire statistically. Mahomes, Hurts, Tua. Nobody has put up historic level records this season except for one rookie in Houston, and his name CJ Stroud. We'll talk about the Texans' big game on Sunday. Up next year on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We are live right here on FFC. It's Football Full Circle, all a part of the Sports Grid Radio Network. So, Scott, as we look at some of the better games as a part of this Week 10 start to the second half of the season NFL Sunday slate, here's a really interesting one for me. The Houston Texans, Scott, are 4-4. Their quarterback, C.J. Stroud, is going to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. And honestly, as we both believe, Scott, and shared yesterday, he should be a part of the MVP conversation, at least considered for the award. Is he going to win it? Ultimately, I don't think either of us, Scott, believe that is going to be the case, but he certainly needs to be a part of the conversation. And if he was a third-year pro, it wouldn't be 130-1 for Stroud to win the Most Valuable Player award. It'd probably be closer to 30-1, if not shorter than that. But Scott, the Texans aren't far off of a playoff spot at this moment, only a full game behind both the Steelers, the Bengals, and the Browns. I said both, but all three of those teams out of the AFC North that you would think would see some attrition as they play each other down the second half stretch of this season. Speaking of the AFC North, Houston is in an AFC North city on Sunday, taking on the Bengals. Cincy, Scott, has won four straight games. They are a 6.5-point favorite against the Texans. The over-under under 48. A step up in class for Houston, no doubt. How do you think CJ Stroud and the Texans perform?
Yeah, and first of all, go back to the beginning of the year, right? Before the beginning of the year, at the end of last year, right? The Texans were the laughing stock bet. Ah, what did you do? You know, Lovie Smith, you won a football game, you cost your team the number one overall pick. And then it was with the Bears. You're like, okay, don't worry, the Bears, you know, they don't need a quarterback. Then the Bears make the big trade. Ah, the Texans, you're the jokes. You know, you won this goofy game and you're not going to get the top quarterback and blah, 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 blah. And it's amazing how things have turned, you know? When they get the right quarterback, clearly, at least at this point anyway, no matter what happens with Bryce Young, clearly, they got a quarterback that can be successful, so that didn't hurt them any. They bring in DeMeco Ryans. You know, they make the big trade. They get the big defensive guy, and all of a sudden, the laughing stock of the NFL is turned into a 4-4 football team. Much better than I thought. I mean, I never thought they'd put it all together. This is kind of one of those litmus tests, right? I mean, are they ready to make a real playoff run? I don't know about that, but, you know, they have an opportunity at 4-4. You win this game. You got Cincinnati coming down, no doubt, from the big game against Buffalo. A little letdown spot for the Bengals. So, you know, chance to make their mark, you know, chance to, if you're holding on to that, you know, CJ Stroud MVP ticket, it won't be the same if the Texans go into Cincinnati and win, you know, 27-20 as Stroud outduels Joe Burrow. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, Scott, outside of this game against the Bengals, they play Arizona the following weekend. They should be favored in that football game. Then a bunch of AFC South games to end the year. Four more. One against Jacksonville, two against Tennessee and Indianapolis to end out the season. Mixed in with the Denver Broncos and the New York Jets, who knows what their seasons are going to look like, Scott, at that point in early December. Listen, I'm not saying the Texans are going to make the playoffs. I think the AFC is way too much of a competitive conference for that to be the case for the Texans. But could they be a 7 or 8 win football team? Certainly so here down the home stretch. It's not just CJ Stroud. The defense is playing well for the most part. I mean, I know they gave up 37 to Tampa Bay, but playing well for the most part under DeMeco Ryans, a very talented defensive mind, and of course the rookie head coach in Houston. And Scott, let's take it that step further. CJ Stroud is a -550 offensive rookie of the year odds on favorite. He's going to win the award. award. They're starting the chiseling on the award of C.J. as we speak. But outside of that, Scott, D'Amico Ryans has the second-best price to win NFL Coach of the Year on the FanDuel Sportsbook at 4-1, less than $2 behind the favorite, Dan Campbell. Now, I think Dan Campbell is going to win the award if Detroit wins the NFC North, doing something they have not for three decades in the National Football League. But Scott, D'Amico has been great as the rookie head man in H-Town. The one thing, though, Scott, the six last winners of the NFL Coach of the Year award, three of them have been a rookie head coach, but all three have made the postseason. You need Houston to be an AFC playoff team if D'Amico Ryans is going to win the award. But if that is the case, Scott, there's a chance he would close it as an odds-on favorite if the Texans saw a postseason berth.
Oh, absolutely. It's too bad they only have one, right? I mean, they got a bunch of other awards for AFC and NFC. You know, would it kill them to make, you know, one for each league versus just one overall? But that's how they do it. But yeah, they would have to make a run. Otherwise, it would be a good story, nice turnaround, you know, all the good things you want to say, but not quite, you know, MVP or Coach of the Year. You know, we'll hand that off to somebody else. But still, leaps and bounds. And, you know, it's funny, Ben, you know, they make the trade with Arizona. And at the beginning of the year, the way Arizona was going and the way Houston's expectations were so low, people were thinking, okay, Arizona Cardinals are going to have two first-round draft choices in the top five at worst, right, if not one and two. But now Houston's doing well, so that Texans' first-round draft pick is getting worse and worse in value. And Arizona apparently is going to bring back Kyler Murray, and maybe they win a couple of football games, and then all of a sudden getting the first or second overall pick for Arizona is now like the fifth, sixth, or seventh if they actually win a few games. So it's amazing how things just turn perspective wise, you know, over the course of a month or so.
Yeah, absolutely. So a 6.5-point spread. I think Cincy will be good in this game. But, Scott, let's just say, first six games of the year for Houston, they were booked as an underdog in five of the six. When they had lost their opening two, they then went on to win three of their next four against Jacksonville, Pittsburgh, and New Orleans, with only a 2-point loss against the Falcons mixed in there. They were booked as a dog in all four of those games. They were a perfect 4-0 against the spread as well. Again, three outright victories as an underdog. I think Cincy under a touchdown is probably the way that I would look, Scott, but I do think the Texans keep this game under double digits, probably right around that touchdown number. I just think you're getting the better of that seven, having that number with the Bengals. An AFC North rivalry, Scott, on Sunday as well. It's the Ravens and the Browns. A 6-point number in favor of Baltimore in the Charm City. Scott, that's as strong of a Ravens line as you will see. Deshaun Watson is back. The Browns have the third best scoring defense in the National Football League. The total for this game, by the way, 38.5, as the Ravens have the best scoring defense in the NFL, the only team allowing less than two touchdowns on average per game. But Scott, to have the Ravens near a touchdown favorite as a 7-2 football team against a divisional foe who is 5-3 at this moment, again, that's a strong Ravens line getting the respect from the odds makers in the marketplace.
Really, yeah. Now, listen, they beat Cleveland 28-3, but that was with Dorian Thompson-Smith. He really was just right. So completely overmatched, right? That wasn't even a fair, or Robinson, I said Smith. That wasn't even a fair, like, fight in that one. But if anything, I think that's going to be motivation and a little extra incentive for the Cleveland Browns. I like the Browns getting nearly a touchdown. You know, we gave the numbers last week with Lamar Jackson at home as a favorite, not very good. Now, he got the job done, clearly. I mean, you can't play any better than what the Ravens played against Seattle this past Sunday, but to think that they're going to be able to duplicate that division game, rivalry game, you know, we know the history between the two. I'll take Cleveland. I think their defense is going to keep this one close. Maybe they don't win, but I don't think they're going to lose by 7 points or more.
Yeah, I mean, Scott, the defense is good enough for Cleveland to stay within any football game, certainly one where they are booked as nearly a touchdown underdog. Now, the Ravens have stepped up in class. When they have played the toughest competition on their schedule, they have been really good at covering numbers. The Browns on the other end, and again, take it all with a grain of salt because P.J. Walker and or Dorian Thompson Robinson were featured in a lot of these games. But as an underdog, Scott, this year, 1-1-1 against the spread. The one cover was against San Francisco. Of course, they won that game outright as an 8.5-point underdog. I just don't see, Scott, in a game that features six, in an NFL game that is nearly at a touchdown in favor of of a team in a divisional rivalry where the total is only 38.5. Again, the odds makers could be wrong, but they don't hang incorrect lines. We might see 45 points. The offense is performing better against two incredibly stout defenses. But when the expectation is 39 points or less, pretty much, Scott, with a full touchdown, just the opportunity to score enough for the Ravens to cover as nearly a touchdown favorite in a divisional rivalry game, that margin becomes so much more difficult to clear.
Yeah, and I'll give you a good example. The numbers, 6-point favorites this year, Ben, or more, 27-9, right? So they don't really lose very many of these football games.
Right.
But against the spread, only 19-16-1. So it goes from, 18 games over 500 straight up to basically pick them, 500 against the spread. So it is difficult. And, I tell you, we talk about litmus tests, with the Houston Texans and a couple other teams. It is a little bit, I think, in my eyes, for the Cleveland Browns more so for Deshaun Watson, Ben. We'd all know the whole story and everything, this, that, what have you. Now, the team has been able to survive a little bit. He's missed a couple of games. They're 5-3. A chance to really say, okay, this is why we paid Deshaun all this money. This is why we guaranteed the contract. This is why we took all the abuse for doing this. This is it. Let's see what you have. They got to go in there, and you know what? Not even cover the spread. They got to go in there and they got to win that game. They want to go to 6-3. Show you are one of the best teams in the AFC. This is arguably his best game, or biggest game for the Cleveland Browns for Deshaun Watson.
Absolutely so. Scott, we weren't sure what we were going to see out of Deshaun last week. 19 of 30, 219 yards, 2 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, only sacked once and ran for 22 yards. The prop market was pretty small. 18.5 completions, he goes over. 28.5 attempts, he goes over. It was 217.5, his passing yards prop, very low by NFL quarterback standards. He goes over. Good for Deshaun, right? That was against the Arizona Cardinals in a blowout game. How can you perform against one of the best defenses in the National Football League, where Scott, for the most part, he has been incredibly mediocre in the now 11 starts that he has made. I mean, if you want to count the Colts game, he did start, but let's say 11 full games and starts that he has made for Cleveland. You're right, Scott. A litmus test for Deshaun Watson in this spot. If the Ravens somehow do win by a touchdown or more, Scott, we're going to have a very different conversation about Baltimore not being on the cusp, but Baltimore maybe being that team to beat in the AFC, not behind the Chiefs or the Bengals or the Bills, Baltimore above the rest of the crop. We'll continue the conversation around the NFL before changing pace to college up next on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We're live right back here on FFC. Scott, a few more early lines to look at for this NFL Sunday week number 10. Some of the best teams around the NFL, like the Chiefs and the Eagles, both on the bye. That's why you get a couple of lackluster games, and the Buffalo Bills playing on Monday night. But one of the best, at least perceived, Scott, returns to action. The San Francisco 49ers, who entered their bye week last weekend on a 3-game losing skid, a tough test out of it, taking on a team also fresh off the bye, the Jacksonville Jaguars. If the Niners lost 3 straight entering, the Jags on the opposite end of that spectrum, the hottest team in the National Football League entering their bye, Scott, winners of 5 straight. And yet it's San Francisco, a 3-point favorite on the road in Duval, a 45.5 for the total, Scott. How do you see this game playing out? Does that spread surprise you at all on either side?
A little bit, and I tell you, if you want to play a hunch, just a goofy hunch, play San Fran to score 17 points, because that's what they've scored exactly in the last 3 games, losing 19-17, 22-17, and then 31-17. So I tell you, I would be real surprised. This is, I don't care who they're playing, Ben, play for me with the boys in Vegas, in that I got to see it to believe it. for San Fran to lose four in a row, especially when one is coming after a bye where they had a chance to rally the groups. And, you know, listen, Jacksonville is good. Love what they're doing. First place.
No doubt.
Got some nice wins. But if San Fran is really the cream of the crop, like we want to believe they are this side of Philadelphia, they just they just have to win. And I am surprised the line is only 3, you know, maybe 3.5, depending on where you do your shopping. But, you know, I'm laying the 3, 3.5, no matter what it is. I think San Francisco comes out storming. And if they don't win this one by double digits, I'd be real surprised and disappointed. Yeah. And no longer just putting them as like absolutely going to the Super Bowl or even the NFC Championship game. They lose 4 in a row, they're capable of losing.
For sure not. Because, Scott, my question would be, right, we expect with the bye week, we haven't really got the report yet as we get into practice for this Sunday tilt, that Deebo Samuel and Trent Williams should be back and healthy alongside Christian McCaffrey. And that's good for Brock Purdy, because when everybody has been healthy, he has been great. But without those guys, I don't think Brock is the issue, Scott, but he has not been the quarterback to lead San Francisco single-handedly to a victory, right? If you were going to tell me on multiple occasions against the Browns and against the Vikings that I would give you somebody like a Joe Burrow or a Patrick Mahomes or a Jalen Hurts, and I said there's 2.5 minutes left, your team is down by 4, you need to go drive the length of the field to score a touchdown, and you had Mahomes, Hurts, Burrow, Allen, you'd probably be feeling pretty good about that. If I tell you Brock Purdy at this moment, you probably don't trust that you're going to come away 100 times out of 100 with a victory. That is Brock Purdy's task here in this second half. Not just a system quarterback, not just a beneficiary of all this talent, but I individually can raise the class of those playing around me as well. And Scott, for all the reasons that you laid out, this is going to be one of my favorite bets of the week, and I'm going to bet it now on FanDuel before it gets the additional hook on, so that if it's a push, it's a push. I don't see San Francisco losing 4 straight, regardless of how good Jacksonville has been. And this is not a shot at the Jaguars. I would expect, Scott, for many, many teams in the National Football League to face the Niners in this spot to really, really struggle. You could put the Eagles in this spot, and I'd still maybe look at San Francisco. And, of course, we'll see that game in a couple of weekends, the opening Sunday of December. But this is one of the strongest lines that you look at in favor of a team and just say, yep, I get it. I get why you're doing this, right? Is there a matchup perspective? Is there a breakdown that would lead you to this and or that? Are the Niners playing all that well? Obviously not, and Jacksonville is. But the fact they are a full 3 favorite on the road against the Jaguars, Scott, that tells me this is a game San Francisco wins and probably wins comfortably. So, Scott, as we change our transition now from the NFL to college football, the second unveiling of the college football playoff rankings last night on a Tuesday. Scott, the CFP selection committee proving what many in the corporate world know. This meeting could have just been an email. The top 8 of the CFP poll remain the exact same. Number 1, Ohio State, still ahead of Georgia, who is number 2. Michigan 3, Florida State 4, Washington 5. Oregon checks in at number 6. At 7, it is Texas. At 8, it is Alabama. Those 8 teams, Scott, the exact same this week as they were last week in the first set of college football playoff rankings. Scott, you have any issue with that, or it makes sense because we didn't really see any chaos in the opening Saturday of November?
I still have the original issues that I had before. So, you know, Michigan being number 3 is just, you can't logically explain to me why Michigan is number 3 with their best win being against Rutgers and UNLV. It makes no sense with Washington beating Oregon. And they have Oregon ranked as high as, you know, 6, which I have no issues with. So if you're telling me this team was able to beat the number 6 team, it doesn't make any sense why Michigan is 3. But that we move down the road with. Other than that, no, I mean, that's it. All the teams won, you know, none beat a great, great team. They all kind of struggled a little bit, right? Ohio State struggled with Rutgers. You know, Georgia, you know, struggled a little bit with Missouri. Decent team. Florida State struggled with Pittsburgh. So you're right. I don't know if these guys all did really get together, just got on a conference call, or just said, you know what, you know, my sheet from last week, do it again, because nothing really has changed. So it's interesting. We got the big one this week is Penn State and then Michigan. That'll be the one where, you know, I looked up, Ben. Listen, you got to be a brain surgeon to figure out the tiebreaker in the Big Ten for if Michigan loses to Penn State but then beats Ohio State. We got 3 teams in that division with 1 loss. And it is a convoluted way of trying to figure out who's going to be the actual division winner that's going to go to the Big Ten championship game. But that would really throw a little wrinkle into things. So if you don't have a dog in a fight, I root for chaos. So let's go Penn State this weekend.
Yes. So, Scott, when you look at the tiebreaker rules in the Big Ten Conference, I believe it would go down to the fifth tiebreaker, which is the record combined of your Big Ten West opponents, of the cross-divisional teams that you have played. And that would be a big benefit beneficiary to Penn State. Why? Because the Nittany Lions played Iowa, and Iowa is a 7-2 team on track right now, somehow, some way, despite a putrid offense, but a historically elite defense, to win the Big Ten West. So that is how things would go. Because, Scott, as it looks right now, in a three-team tiebreaker, it can be determined by as many as six steps,
yeah,
according to the conference rules. Compared based on winning percentage in games between the tied teams, that's going to be tough because they've all played each other. The records of the three teams are compared based on winning percentage within the division. Well, if they've all beat each other in the Big Ten East, that's it. The records of the three teams are compared against the next highest placed team in the division, order to finish. Again, you would probably think if they have only beaten each other, it eliminates the scenario. The records of the three teams are compared based on winning percentage against all common conference opponents. That could be a difference for these teams. But again, if their only loss is to one another, that's where the tiebreakers get very, very complicated. It's not like Penn State beat Ohio State and Michigan but lost to Maryland, and that's why you have two teams that have one loss. And then, Scott, here's that fifth tiebreaker that I believe will come into play. The records of the three teams are compared based on the best cumulative conference winning percentage of non-divisional opponents. Those would be teams from the Big Ten West. Ohio State probably thought they had the leg up with Wisconsin. The Badgers have struggled here as of late. Losses to Ohio State 2 weekends ago, and then Indiana last weekend. Iowa being 7-2 and 4-2, Scott, in the Big Ten West. The Hawkeyes, the only team with less than four losses overall in their record, and the only team with less than three losses in conference play. That's a huge bump for Penn State. But of course, the Nittany Lions have to handle their business at home this week, booked as a 5.5-point underdog against Michigan. And Scott, that kind of plays in part to what we are discussing here. Now, I believe, Scott, like you, that each week matters what the committee is saying. It gives us a small glimpse, if there is any identifying factor, of how the committee is using all of their metrics, strength of schedule, resume, strength of record, whatever it might be, in terms of how they evaluate the country in college football. They are not beholden to any of those standard protocols, and we see that week to week, year to year. It doesn't really matter with the groups of individuals that sit in that snazzy conference room in Grapevine, Texas. So, Scott, I believe that each week should be significant. Each week should be at least a small peek behind the curtain into how the selection committee is evaluating the year that has been happening in college football. And so I don't like the approach and the argument that's, I don't care, man. Wake me up on Sunday, December 3rd, following conference championship weekend, when the Final Four teams are announced. That's all I care about. I don't like that. It provides great conversation for us nonetheless. But Scott, for me, I actually kind of get it right now, at least following the second set of rankings, right? That this one maybe not all that significant, and I think we kind of saw that from the committee yesterday. With three top 15 tilts on this second Saturday in November, week number 11 of the college football season, the big one in Happy Valley, a top 10 game between 10th-ranked Penn State, 3rd-ranked Michigan, the top 10 tilt in Sanford Stadium in Athens between Georgia and Ole Miss. Ole Miss number 9 in the country, Georgia number 2 in the CFP rankings, and a top 15 showdown in Seattle, Scott, between Washington and Utah. A lot will be ironed out this week, so I don't think the third set of CFP rankings will look like the first two.
Right. But the only thing issue I have with it, Ben, is like, I'm counting on these guys being straightforward, and this is what they're really thinking. They're not trying to gain publicity. They're not trying to, you know, this is what they're thinking. And if that's the case, then again, I go back to Michigan being ranked third. I mean, a five-year-old could say Michigan's schedule is not even closely remote to what Washington has been able to accomplish. So why is Michigan number 3? So if they can't get something as simple as that right now, I don't have any confidence that even when this all shakes out, that they're going to be able to put the right team up there. I just, even though, you know, when everything is said and done, maybe a five-year-old could figure out who the top four teams are. But somewhere along the line, we're going to get a debate, and I just don't understand. You know, is it the sinister factor of, hey, we want people talking about this thing, so let's put Michigan number three because a five-year-old could say that he really should be number three, but that'll have people talking. We put Washington number three, no one's going to be talking about it. So you always just wonder what is their real goal when it comes to these things. You know, I love the old days where, you know, the AP and the coaches decide the national champion. I wouldn't want that now, but I liked it in that there was debate and this and that. So I take these things a little bit more religiously than maybe others do. And I just don't have the confidence. But we'll see. We'll see what happens after this weekend, you know, where they put these teams and how the games play out.
Yeah, absolutely so. And this week is monumental. Scott, speaking of Michigan, it is a big day for the Wolverines as the entire sign-stealing scandal and the saga that it has formed continues to provide new updates and storylines and headlines on a daily basis. Today is significant, though, from the practical nature of it, because the Big Ten gave Michigan a notice of potential punishment over the weekend. Michigan has until this evening, Scott, to issue its response to the Big Ten Conference. Based on the sportsmanship policy and guidelines, the commissioner, Tony Petitti, and the league office can hand down a discipline outside of the NCAA's investigation. Official word from the Big Ten of what that punishment might look like or might not be, Scott, is expected to come by Thursday or Friday, which of course coincides with Michigan's biggest game yet, its best test of the year, on the road in Beaver Stadium against Penn State. Scott, there has been some conversation now as reports have come out in the last 24 hours that Rutgers and Ohio State provided Purdue Michigan's signals as the Boilermakers got ready to take on the Wolverines in last year's Big Ten Conference Championship game. It was revealed by a former Purdue staffer who is no longer on the staff in West Lafayette, although his identity remains confidential and anonymous at this point. We'll get Scott's response to this because there's a lot of equivocating happening around college football that I think we need to iron out on the other side of the break here on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Scott Wetzel and Ben Stevens.
We are live right here on FFC. So, Scott, it's the Wednesday Michigan sign-stealing scandal update. We have to clarify days and times because there are new reports and headlines and storylines each and every day. The one that came out yesterday, Scott, following the AP's report on Monday evening that certain Big Ten teams had been working together to hand opponents Michigan's schedules by a former Big Ten staffer who remains anonymous because he doesn't want to affect his future in the coaching profession in the collegiate ranks. Well, Scott, yesterday we got some names. It was a former Purdue staffer who no longer works in the Big Ten that Ohio State and Rutgers teamed up to help Purdue before their game against Michigan in the Big Ten title last December to have Michigan's signs as well, to which Michigan then turned over that proof to the Big Ten. As a way, Scott, to say, not that we didn't do anything wrong, and this is not necessarily an admission of guilt either, but hey, everybody's doing it, and if you want to talk about sportsmanship and the ethical code of football, if you're going to punish us, you better punish them, and our competitive advantage might not be as high as it seems. Scott, what did you make of this latest wrinkle to the ongoing sign-stealing saga?
Yeah, the problem with all that is the timeline. You know, Michigan is being accused of cheating 2-3 years ago. This is coming up this past season. So, Ohio State and Rutgers could say, yeah, well, we did it because they were doing it for 2 years. So that would be that. Then you got the story about the Blake Corum. You see that one, the running back from Michigan? Oh, his name is on a LLC listing him as a partner with Connor Stallions, who's running supposedly a vacuum cleaner refurbishing business out of Wyoming. out of Wyoming, no less. And Corum's like, why? You know, he just just found this out. Supposedly he didn't know. Well, that's crazy. Crazy. It's funny. Really.
Listen, the 30 for 30 on one Connor Stallions is going to be one of the highest watched 30 for 30s or sports documentaries in history. And it's going to be sensational. He's Scott Wetzel. I am Ben Stevens. I'm sure we'll have a Michigan update tomorrow when you join us on Football Full Circle at noon Eastern time, live right here on Sports Grid Radio.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.